So we are continuing, we're almost done our Rule of Life series, in which we've been talking about creating this rule of life. And a rule of life is basically like a trellis. This is the beautiful trellis that Paul drew last week. It's like a trellis, a structure, on which our life of faith can grow and twist and wind. So this is not actually alive. Our faith is the thing that's alive. But this certainly helps our faith grow around it. And so we have these sort of foundational pieces of prayer, spiritual reading, Bible reading, Sabbath, which is what we're talking about today, community, friendships, the body, so exercise, play, enjoying creation, simplicity, learning how to simplify our lives, and mission, what it looks like to reach out. And these are all components of this rule of life that we're talking about. So today, we're talking about Sabbath. And if you want to turn in your Bibles or on your devices, we're going to be looking primarily at Mark chapter 2, verses 23 to 28. And it'll probably be called Lord of the Sabbath or something like that in the top. So let's read that together. Oh, and reminder, there will be Q&A after the service. So you'll have a little white handout that came with your bulletin. On there, I've kind of put an outline of the sermon. But on the back, there are questions, reflection kind of questions. What stood out to you today as you were worshiping? What's God been speaking to you? What questions does it raise for you? So feel free to jot down questions for the response time at the end. Let's read this together. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and his disciples walked along, and as they walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. And the Pharisees, the religious leaders of the day, said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" And he, Jesus, answered, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. And then he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And so the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath.'" The Gospel of Mark is a fast-paced gospel. It's a gospel of action. We've been studying it in our young adults small group this summer, and we keep shrinking the passages because every week we go way over time because there's so much happening. And so within the first few chapters of Mark, we find Jesus, the gentle but divine carpenter from Galilee, embroiled in conflict that will lead to his death. Now, you might ask, what could Jesus be saying and doing so quickly, right off the bat, that gets himself in this kind of trouble? Well, in the first three chapters, we find Jesus in five sticky situations. And in the last of these, the last is kind of like the final straw. The religious leaders of the day decide, that's it, this guy's got to go. And so they begin to plot his death. And so what is he doing in these five sticky situations that gets himself eventually killed? Well, in two of these situations, Jesus heals people who are suffering. And in three, he eats, has to do with eating, with people who are hungry and poor. And the thing that finally sends the religious leaders over the edge is the last two of these situations, in which he heals and he eats on their holy day, the Sabbath. And so we read the first of these stories in which Jesus and his disciples are walking through this grain field, and they're hungry, they're in need, they're not very rich, they're poor, and they pick food and they eat it on the Sabbath. Now this story is, might be the first time you hear it or read through it, sounds like, wait, what exactly is going on? But it's important for us. It's important because it tells us why participating in the Sabbath is so darn important. But it also frees us from so many of the restricting misconceptions about what keeping the Sabbath means for Christians. So in this story, Jesus affirms going to stay on that one for a bit. In this story, Jesus affirms that participating in a weekly Sabbath, so that means participating a weekly day in which you cease from all work, all your regular work, is important. And it's a good thing for his followers to do. But he corrects the idea that Sabbath keeping is primarily about our relationship with work. He kind of says it's actually, we need to remember that Sabbath keeping is about more than a work-life balance. It's not really just about lifestyle. It's about acknowledging God as our giver and provider, and Jesus as the one who ultimately runs our lives, who rules over our lives. So at the end of this story, Jesus responds to the Pharisees because they're standing there, they're watching the disciples and they're going, oh, they're breaking the Sabbath. These guys are bad news. I mean, they're already in their bad books. But this was bad. And they say, hey, what are they doing? They're picking grain. That's, you know, breaking the Sabbath. And Jesus says this to them. He says, the Sabbath was made for people, not people for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. And so today we're going to break that saying down into three parts and look at what this means. What are the implications for this on how we as Christians keep Sabbath? The Sabbath was made for people. So Siobhan just came back from Russia with some big news, which is pretty exciting. Siobhan and I are roommates. We live together. And she said, she called me, actually, before I even saw her and said, oh, Julia, I feel terrible. Siobhan's gift-giving language, or Siobhan's love language is gift-giving. So giving gifts is very important. She said, you know what? I got the joke part of your gift, but I didn't get, like, the actual gift that I wanted to give you. So just be prepared when I give you your gift from Russia. It's just the joke part. Now I know Siobhan, and I know her sense of humor, and I trust Siobhan. And so even though I had no idea what the joke gift would be, I was excited to open it, because I know her. And I was also pretty sure that I was going to laugh, and that it was just going to be a good time. And so I did laugh, and I will never tell you what the joke gift was, except that it was good. It was really good, Siobhan. Now, there are certain other people in my life, if they came up and said, hey, I just got the joke gift of your present, here you go, I would be totally nervous to open it. You have these people in your life where you're just not exactly sure what the joke gift is going to be. When receiving a gift, there's this sense that it requires a little bit of trust in the person who's giving you the gift, right? Because there's surprise involved. We don't know what the gift is. So receiving a gift requires trust. It requires we know a little bit, at least, about the character of the gift giver. When the religious leaders accused Jesus' followers of breaking the Sabbath law, he reminded them that according to the Old Testament, the original spirit of this, the Sabbath was first and foremost a gift, not law. It was gift. The Sabbath was made for people, he said, not people for the Sabbath. And so Sabbath was originally a gift to Israel, and it was based on two main parts of Scripture. And because of these very key parts of Scripture, this defined Israel in its cultural context. They took one day off, 24-hour period, from sundown on Friday to sundown on Saturday, and ceased all work. Not only did they cease work, but their servants and even their animals didn't work on this day. So imagine that in this context. It's pretty significant. So this is what they did in their ancient context as well. And it was based on these two things. The first is Genesis, creation. Genesis 1 and 2 tells us that God created the world in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested from all of his work. And because of that, he blessed the seventh day and he made it holy. Now, when we think of resting, we think of grabbing a slushie. There's a beautiful reenactment going on up in the corner of this work of art. Those beautiful guys. We think of grabbing a slushie and putting our feet up by the pool. That's resting to us. But I don't think God got a slushie. He might have. I don't know what he did. But when the Bible says he rested, it means he sat down on his throne. It's sort of regal throne language, because this is what the gods in the ancient Near Eastern myths did once they had done something really great. They sat down in their throne and they began their reign. So this isn't God like, whew, that was exhausting, I'm going to take a break now. This was God seated in his throne, ready to take sort of the wheel at the helm of creation and rule it. On the seventh day, God sat in his throne and got ready to rule creation. And so Israel was commanded to respond to this by ceasing from all of their work for 24 hours. And this was partially because it's good for us to rest, and we're created needing a rest, to need rest. But primarily, this was actually to show themselves and the rest of the world that ultimately it's God, not humans, that's in control of this world, in control of every aspect, including our economy, including how, you know, how we feed ourselves, every aspect. It is God who cares for us and provides for us. The second reason Israel was to rest or to cease from work on the seventh day was based on the Exodus story. When God freed Israel from slavery and he made them into his own beloved nation, it was told in the story of the Exodus. And Moses, when he retells the giving of the Ten Commandments in the book of Deuteronomy, he highlights this story. And he says, he reminds Israel that even their servants and their animals, and he also says any foreigners who are living amongst you are also supposed to cease from work on the seventh day. Because God is the ultimate authority over all creation. So as humans, we have our own authority structures, but really it's God who is in charge of all humans and all animals, creation as well. And so on the seventh day, it's like we step down from that hierarchy and we say, actually, it's God who is over all of us. So there's a radical sense of justice and equality in Sabbath keeping. Can you imagine, slavery still exists today around the world. Can you imagine if slaves got a day off where their ruler said, oh, actually, today, we're all on the same playing field. We're all good to go. That can be even hard for us to imagine in our own economy of what that would look like. But this was God's command to his people. And the best example, and the example he gave to them was, hey, once you guys were slaves, and I called you to myself to be my own. Every human has dignity and worth. And so on the seventh day, we mark that and we celebrate it. So in summary, Sabbath was a gift for Israel, but not just for Israel. It was really a gift for the world, for all people who came into contact with Israel. And even the land and the animals. I love that part. Even the animals got Sabbath. And it was a reminder that God is a God of justice and compassion for all people, and that ultimately is he who is our provider and who cares for us. So the Sabbath is about a lot more than rest. It's about who we believe is in control of our world, and it's about justice for those who have little power and advantage in our world. So the Sabbath is a gift. It's a gift for humanity from a God who is on our side. Sabbath was made for people, not people for the Sabbath. The summer I turned 16, my family, or I no, I turned 16 in January. Okay, this is important. So I had my driver's license. Anyway, so that summer, my family drove to a wedding in Winnipeg. And after both mom and dad had driven for long hours, dad kind of said, well, hey, do you want to take a turn driving for a while? And I was like still a little shaky behind the wheel, not 100% confident. But being a very good eldest daughter, I thought I should really give mom and dad a break, a rest. So I was a little tentative, but I got behind the wheel. And once I got going, I actually felt really great. So there were a few dicey situations, including passing a truck on a bridge and the whole family screaming. And a few times, where I strayed a little too close to the yellow line and my mom was like, slow down. But all in all, I felt pretty good about being able to contribute on the family road trip and give mom and dad such a good rest, like a good relaxing Just they could just let go and know that I was driving. So you can imagine my surprise when after only a short time, Dad said, look, through gritted teeth, well, I think we've all had enough of a rest. To general applause from the whole family. Things tend to feel better and safer when we're the ones behind the wheel, especially if we know how to drive. When Jesus and his disciples got in trouble with the Pharisees in today's story, they were picking heads of grain and eating them, which sounds strange to our modern ears. But here's what was going on. They weren't a lot of... imagine the picture. This is a great picture. We've got Jesus and his disciples in a field of grain. What do we think of when we think of fields of grain ripe for harvest? Often we think of themes of provision, God's goodness. We celebrate, you know, in the fall, there's a good feeling, and the girls start drinking pumpkin spice lattes, and we're like, oh, and it feels like God has provided for us. So this is kind of the scene. We have the scene of provision and abundance of food. Now, Jesus and his disciples are kind of, they're poor. They don't have a lot of money. And in Jewish culture, this was a command from God, again, God commanded people to leave a little bit of grain on the edge of their field when they harvested so that the poor and the foreigners and the travelers could pick grain and have something to eat as they were passing through. So they weren't doing anything technically wrong. Well, they weren't doing anything wrong. Technically, they were. So this is the picture we have. The poor are being fed. There's a God's abundance. This sounds like our Old Testament picture of what Sabbath is all about, right? Justice, abundance, God is our provider. And yet, the religious leaders are there, and they're watching, and they are mad. They are not happy. And they accuse Jesus and his followers of not keeping the law, of not actually respecting the Sabbath day, because they classified picking heads of grain as harvesting. And harvesting is work. And so they were working. And so this, in their minds, was an excellent excuse to confront Jesus and say, hey, what are you doing? You're influencing people to abuse the Sabbath. And so it's easy for us to think, whoa, what? This is horrible jerks. Like, they sound like monsters. What are they doing? Surely this is not a horrible abuse of the Sabbath. But here's where they were coming from. The Pharisees belonged to a sect within Judaism that believed that the key to ending Israel's political oppression by the Romans was getting God's attention. Because right now, here's the context, they're in Israel, but they're occupied by the Romans. So they're living in a politically tricky situation in which other people, foreigners who are more powerful, are telling them what to do, are taxing them heavily, and they're feeling oppressed. They are. And so the Pharisees thought, we need to get God's attention so that he comes back. We've offended God. And the way that God's attention would be summoned, they believed, is if God's people behaved better, if they kept the rules God gave them more exactly, because they must be messing up somewhere. And so if everyone worked really hard at following God's laws and being more righteous, being better, then essentially, they figured God would do what they wanted him to do, which was kick the Romans out and restore things back to the good old days. And this wasn't a uniform ideology or way of thinking in Israel at the time, but this was how the Pharisees, and they're the ones in this, they're the particular religious leaders in this story that we meet today, and this is what they thought. So Sabbath keeping became to them a lot less about receiving a gift from God and more about working hard to control their lives. They kind of took the gift and said, okay, we can use this as a tool to make things work out the way that we want them to. And so ultimately to kind of make God do what they wanted God to do. And not surprisingly, in their hands, Sabbath keeping quickly became oppressive to the people, and it actually became quite dehumanizing, as we can see by this story, where the poor, who are supposed to be fed on the Sabbath, are actually being accused of doing something wrong. But, like I mentioned in my illustration, things feel safer and easier when we're the ones in the driver's seat, when we're the ones in control. So the Pharisees took control of the Sabbath. According to the academic Rutger Bregman. Did I get that right, Marilyn? Rutger Bregman? He tells us this. In the mid-1960s, a U.S. Senate committee report projected that by 2000, the year 2000, the work week would be down to just 14 hours, with at least 7 weeks off per year for the average person. The year 2000. Can you imagine what that would be like? We would all be at the cottage right now. We would be having the best time, or on our sailboats, I'm not sure, like this happy 1960s couple. That didn't really happen, did it? Here we are in year 2017. Time is money. And the smarter our technology gets, the more we come to rely on it, right? And find ourselves unable to unplug, unable to deconnect, or leave our virtual offices that follow us and come with us everywhere. And as we're wooed by sort of this consumer culture to want more things and to have a higher and higher standard of living, we feel more and more that we can't afford to work less. That if we really want to just live at a decent standard of living, that we need to work more and more and more. It's exhausting. And so I think that we can relate a little bit to the Pharisees in that we often feel like there's these outside forces that are controlling us that we actually don't have a lot of control over. And we feel like there's other things that demand more and more than we can give. Now, into this sort of mess that we often feel ourselves in, where we're exhausted and we're like, we just need a break, comes this idea of Sabbath keeping as primarily about rest and work-life balance. Now, those are important things, and they're actually beautiful spin-offs of the Sabbath, is that Sabbath builds rest regularly into our lives. It builds a sort of balance and rhythm that we as humans were designed and created for. But that's not the goal of Sabbath keeping, actually. And if it becomes primarily about just getting a rest once a week, then we find ourselves in the same place as the Pharisees again, where we start to use this gift to try and control and save our lives. Does that make sense? We take it, and then we actually, and I've heard this so many times, like, I would love to take a Sabbath, but I can't. And then there's this feeling of guilt, like I'm not being spiritual enough because I'm so overwhelmed and I can't figure out how to take it. And I think that's coming of that same root of using Sabbath almost to control or to save our lives. And often it takes a crisis for us to throw our hands up and, in the infamous words of Carrie Underwood, say, "Jesus, take the wheel." You guys remember the song? "Jesus, take it." So the Sabbath invitation is not to wait for a crisis for us to say, "Jesus, take the wheel." But to actually practice this, to practice being this little dog once a week and saying, "Jesus, please take the wheel." Because then when a crisis comes, we already know that Jesus does hold the wheel. That in fact, us sitting in the driver's seat and holding the wheel is a bit of an illusion. We're in it together with Christ. And we were never fully driving on our own. And if you're anything like 16-year-old me, that's probably a good idea for everybody. The Sabbath was made for people, not people for the Sabbath. The Sabbath wasn't made to control us, nor were we made to control the Sabbath. It is a gift. And so the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. Jesus finishes his encounter with the Pharisees by referring to himself as the Son of Man and Lord of the Sabbath. So let's break down these terms a little bit to find out what he's trying to say. The Son of Man was one of Jesus' favorite nicknames for himself. And it comes from the prophet Daniel in the Old Testament. He was the original creator of this name. When Israel was in trouble, we're doing a flashback into the Old Testament right now. When Israel was in trouble, Daniel had a dream. And in his dream, he looked up to heaven and he saw one who was like a son of man. So in other words, he saw someone that looked like a human coming out of the clouds of heaven. And this human that also seemed to be kind of divine, godlike, came out of heaven and brought justice and salvation to the entire world and ruled over this world in this benevolent way, bringing justice, bringing salvation. And so it's a term for someone that would be kind of both human and godlike, divine, and someone who is humble, someone who suffers, and who identifies with the needy, but who also has power, who also rules the world with kindness. It's the ultimate king, kind of, in our stories, the one that comes from the people, and so really knows what the people need and what they want, and then leads well and justly and benevolently. So this is what the Son of Man connotes in Israel's culture. And so Jesus takes this term on to describe himself. He's human, he is also God, and he is going to rule justly. The second term Jesus used to describe himself is Lord, Lord of the Sabbath. This term has to do with authority and power. Jesus is saying that he has authority and power over the Sabbath. So at this point in Mark's gospel, this is no surprise to us. Because in the first few chapters, Jesus is demonstrating over and over again that he has authority and that he has power. But he's also demonstrating to us in bizarre ways that he does not use his authority and his power like most people do, or most rulers, or most of us would. So for instance, after he does a miracle, he usually tells people to keep it quiet. He says, don't tell anyone about this. Just keep it on the down low. And so he's very private about these things that maybe many of us would be like, hey, look what I can do. I'm God. Come and follow me. But he doesn't do that. He uses his power in a different way. And then he shows that he's not really after fame or popularity, even though this seems to start happening naturally. He keeps his miracles a secret, but he allows himself to be associated with the morally questionable in that society. So he kind of hangs out with the riffraff, and he makes this very public. He doesn't hide that part of himself. So he's like this strange person who has all this power and authority, but he uses it in this bizarre, very upside-down way. It's only this kind of leader, Jesus is saying, a benevolent king who comes from and for the people and is a ruler who uses his power not for self-gain but for bringing life and bringing flourishing to other people. It's only this kind of leader who can control the Sabbath so that it remains a gift to humanity and not a curse, so that it doesn't become dehumanizing. And Jesus claims to be that leader. So the ruler of our lives is not like, I think sometimes we almost think of the call to Sabbath of almost like Jesus is like this distant guru who's all at peace, calling to us to find some elusive balance and rest in the midst of our demanding lives. But that's not who Jesus is. If he is the Lord of the Sabbath, if he is in control over this day of ceasing from work, then he is the one who walks with us, who is there with us in the middle of the night as we're taking care of sick kids, who is sitting at the boardroom table with us as we seek to bring clarity to a challenging situation. He's the one who knows exactly how many emails, even more than we do, are waiting in our inbox, and he knows how many people are relying on our help and needing a text back from us fast. He knows how much our mortgages cost and how much our bank accounts hold. He is the God who comes from us, who walks amongst us. He is one of us, the Son of Man. And yet, he's also the God, the only one, who has power and authority over these things. We know that we don't, right? We often feel ruled by our inboxes, ruled by these things. But Jesus is the only one who has power and authority to hold all of these things in his capable and strong hands. He is the one, not us, who sits at the helm of our lives and who uses his power not just to make himself greater, but actually to bring life and flourishing to us. It's this God, this Jesus, that invites us to cease from work for one 24-hour period a week, who invites us to Sabbath. Is this the Jesus that you believe in? Is that the God that you believe in? If so, then I think we can trust ourselves to accept this gift, which is offered so beautifully in Jesus' words in Matthew, where he says, "Come, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you." That's like a thing that guides and directs animals. "But take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." When I was little, I had a friend who grew up in an apartment building that was mainly occupied by the Jewish community, a very religious Jewish community. And they paid my friends on Sabbath to press the elevator buttons for them, because that's considered work. And we'll find many Jews in today still practicing law, still practicing Sabbath, like we do on Sunday, but according to Old Testament law, because in the Old Testament, God put some very specific rules around what participating in Sabbath looked like. And after that, the religious leaders built some more around that just to safeguard the Sabbath. And this was to help people acknowledge God as creator. And actually, they were put in place to help people really remember what was at the heart of the Sabbath, this idea of justice and God as our provider. As Christians, we believe that when Jesus came, he said, "Actually, I've fulfilled all of these rules. I fulfilled them in myself. And so instead of calling you to these rules, I'm calling you to myself as Lord of the Sabbath." And so the early Christians, which were a Jewish sect, they held on to this idea of Sabbath keeping. They switched it, and I should have done more research on exactly why. And if any of you know, I'd love to hear in the Q&A time. But they moved it to Sunday, the day that we call Sunday. And they would cease working and use it as a day for celebrating, for feasting together, for ensuring that the poor were fed, and for worship together. They called it the Lord's Day, and we call it Sunday. And so here's the crazy part. Jesus didn't actually give us rules for how to follow the Sabbath, how to keep Sunday. He left it pretty wide open to our imagination, our creativity, and our specific context. And so rules are way easier than imagination, right? Because then we just know we're doing it right. We don't have that. We have Jesus. And so instead of rules, we have to keep going back to Jesus, this Lord of the Sabbath, watching him, listening to him, and learning from how he did it. And so Jesus kept the same spirit of the law that was in the Old Testament. So the thing that changed was the how-to, but the why remains the same of the Sabbath. That's something that we share with the Jewish community. And here are, I think, three principles, and there are more, but I drew out three, that I think that we can use as we imagine together as a community what keeping Sabbath looks like for us here in this place. The first is to stop. This is expressed in ceasing from work that God commanded to the Israelites. This doesn't mean that we can't do any work. The idea, the spirit behind it, is ceasing from our ordinary rhythms, routines, schedules, the things that we do that make us feel useful and productive and like we're in control. So this is a really vulnerable thing to do, to stop, because it means we're suddenly kind of just feeling like, well, what's my purpose? What am I actually doing? And yet, God calls us to stop so that we can acknowledge him as our ultimate source, as our creator, as our provider, as the one who's in control of all this stuff once a week. It takes courage to stop, but this courage is found in Christ, who's the Lord of the Sabbath, who dwells in us. And so we can do it. I know that we can. So for me, this looks like, and I have not kept a Sunday or a Sabbath my whole life. I have done so better at different times in my life. Right now, this is what it looks like. From sundown on Sunday to sundown on Monday, I don't do my regular stuff. So if you text me and you don't get a text back until Tuesday morning or Sunday night, that's because, or Monday night, it's because I try best as I can, and I do fail, to not do my regular stuff that I do throughout the week. And it feels uncomfortable quite often, especially when that thing comes up on your phone, you're like, oh, I forgot to tell that person, and they really need, but it's part of that trusting. It's not always easy. The other part, or the other principle, I think, is justice. And this is something we often don't talk about with the Sabbath. This idea of dignity and equality for all of humanity. For me, I'm still working on this one, on how to incorporate this aspect into my Sabbath practice. I haven't done this yet, but I'm considering not buying anything in that 24-hour period. Not because buying stuff is work, it can be, but not because of that. It can also be fun, right? But because it participates in this sort of consumer culture that often oppresses people in the bigger, grander scheme of thing. And so I'm working on that one. I haven't figured it fully out yet, but I'm thinking about maybe just saying, I'm not going to buy stuff in that 24-hour period. I don't know. Again, using our imagination, right? Using creativity. How might God be calling us to practice justice on our Sabbath? The other aspect of justice that we see is care for creation, right? Even the animals and the land were supposed to just stop that day. What does that look like? How do we care for creation as part of our Sabbath? For me, this has looked like being outside. I love to garden. I have a really nerdy membership to the Royal Botanical Gardens, and I go on a walk through them. When I'm outside, I tend to appreciate and just notice that, oh, I am a person that lives in creation, and this is a gift. And I tend to care for it more. I tend to watch a little bit more what I'm throwing out, all of that kind of stuff, if I appreciate it. So that's been part of my Sabbath practice. Again, that might look totally different from you. But what does justice look like on the Sabbath for us? The third is worship. Joyfully participating in the life of the triune God, the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. Worship. We think of worship as something that we do on Sunday mornings when we sing together and when we participate here, and that is worship. That is something that we're doing. Worship is larger than that. As well. In a sense, there's everything we do to delight in God, to lift his name high, to live as fully human, how he created us. This is our participation in worship. Being together, worship is not something we just do on our own. It's not just me and Jesus. It is all of us as a community together, as we see very clearly on Sunday mornings, right? It's being together. And it's also enjoying the fruits of creation. So enjoying worshiping God for how he shows himself to us in the natural world as well. So for me, this is where it gets a bit weird because I'm a pastor. And so the work that you as a community have called me to is participating in worship and all week long and helping. And so that's where I'm also thankful that Sabbath is not just rules, it also involves imagination because it frees me up a little bit as well. So my Sabbath is not on just Sunday, it's on Monday. And connecting with community, I tend to connect on my Sabbath with what I call my diaspora faith community. So other friends, some of whom are also pastors, calling my parents and chatting for a good chunk of time on the phone on Mondays. Letter writing is something I'm kind of reviving, thanks to some friends who are better at it than me, and then I feel guilty, but not coming out of a guilty place, but trying to find the joy in it as well. The other thing is creating. I try to create, and this doesn't always happen, sketching, gardening, even just daydreaming is part of the creative process. So that is another way that we can practice worship on Sunday, some of the ways that I do. What might these look like, stopping, justice, worship for you? What could they look like? Sabbath is a gift. It's a gift that promises to bring life and flourishing to our lives as we acknowledge and learn to trust. It's a process. Learn to trust the gift giver.